This is a recording of the rulemaking hearing held by the Federal Election Commission on December 16, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
We're now convening the second panel for the public hearing on the definition of federal election activity. And thank you very much for being here. Apologize because we're late getting started, but it's kind of the nature of the beast sometimes when we get started on matters. I want to thank Neil Reif, Joseph Sandler, Ron Nearing, and John Felipe for being here. I've talked to both all of you before this, and as I understand it, you're only looking to have one statement for the two of you, so that we'll do it that way. But let's figure just 5 to 10 minutes and, on each, and we'll be flexible about that. So we'll just begin with that. So Mr. Reif, Mr. Sure. Sandler, thank you.
We'll be brief.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to appear today to provide oral testimony in connection with this rulemaking regarding the Commission's definition of voter registration and get out the vote. I'll be making a short opening statement on behalf of both Joe Sandler and myself. We appear here today on our own behalf. Our views are based on our experiences as counsel to over 35 Democratic State Party committees and several associations of state and local candidate organizations, but we are not speaking for any specific client today. This rulemaking is required due to the D.C. Court of Appeals decision in Shays versus FEC. In that decision, the court instructed the FEC to amend its regulations regarding the definition of voter registration and get out the vote due to the court's concerns that the Commission's current rules created two distinct loopholes. Without much elaboration, the court was concerned that the Commission's current rules regarding individualized contacts and the requirement that such activities assist a voter in order to be subject to the regulations. We believe that both of these concerns can be addressed without a vast federalization of non-federal campaign activity. We believe that virtually all campaign activity that benefits federal candidates are already required to be paid for with federal funds, such as the rule that requires any public communication that promotes or supports or attacks or opposes a federal candidate be paid for exclusively with federal dollars, as well as the fact that most generic campaign activity is already covered under the current FEC rules. So, as a practical matter, what we are essentially considering here today is how much non-federal campaign activity will be subject to federal regulation. We believe the Commission can satisfy the court's concerns with modest changes to its regulations and providing clearer guidance on what constitutes voter registration and get out the vote. To that end, we have provided specific proposed regulatory language in our written comments. Our proposed language addresses the court's concerns first by eliminating the concept of individualized contacts and replacing it with specific types of communications that are commonly used to directly communicate with a voter, such as mail, phones, in-person contact, as well as email and text messaging. Our proposal would also include calls made right before an election that are designed solely to remind voters to get out to vote. Second, we suggest that the Commission replace the assist standard with what we refer to as a facilitation standard. This would make it clear that the Commission's regulations do not cover those communications that are merely designed to encourage registration and voting and include those activities that help bring the desired activity about. This clearer standard can be fleshed out with the proposed examples in our written comments. During this rulemaking process, the Commission should be mindful that the Shays Court undertook its task in what appears to be a political vacuum, devoid of empirical evidence and a realistic understanding of how the challenge regulations operated in the larger regulatory scheme. Thus, it is imperative that the Commission adopt a standard short of mere encouragement. To do so would essentially federalize all campaign communications and activities undertaken by party committees and non-federal associations. This is clearly not what Congress had intended, and we predict that it would lead to considerable confusion and uncertainty in the regulated community and thus undermine, rather than further, the interests of consistent compliance with the law. Thank you for your consideration of our oral and written testimony. We would be happy to take any questions for you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Are you ready for Mr. Nearing?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, members of the Commission and staff, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'm here in my capacity as chairman of the Republican State Chairman's Committee of the Republican National Committee. To my right is Mr. John Filippi, chief counsel of the RNC, who will be available to answer questions as well. It is a privilege to be part of this bipartisan panel. And in reviewing the other comments submitted for this rulemaking, I was really struck by a few things. First, almost all the commenters who weighed in on the merits of the proposed rules expressed a strong belief that the Commission's proposals would go too far. Second, several of the commenters are from my home state of California, where I'm chairman of the state Republican Party. And third, most of the commenters are Democrats. So these are the same people whose candidates and causes I'm often working against as I work to elect Republicans across California in my role as, chairman of the State Chairman's Committee for the State Party, for the National Party across the country. But today I'm pleased to join with my Democrat colleagues in urging the Commission to protect state and local political activity and speech. Put another way, to protect the rights of Americans to participate in voter registration and get out the vote activity through political parties. State and local parties are primarily concerned with electing state and local officials. I say this based upon my experience not only as state party chairman in California, where I've served in that role for 3 years, but also for 5.5 years as the county Republican chairman in San Diego, California. The national party committees, such as the RNC, the National Republican Senatorial Committee, and the National Republican Congressional Committee, and their Democrat counterparts, take the lead on electing federal candidates. In internal discussions at our state party, I always refer to the NRCC as the lead agency on congressional races, and the NRSC as the lead agency on the U.S. Senate race in California. Our state and local parties are focused on electing state and local candidates primarily through grassroots activities. And in states such as California, we're also greatly interested in state ballot measures, propositions, initiative, referenda. Voter registration and turnout programs make up a substantial part of our operations, both at the state party level as well as our county committees throughout California. Should the Commission adopt the proposed regulations, a large portion of our grassroots activities supporting state candidates, local candidates, and ballot measures would suddenly be federalized and restricted. I'm deeply concerned about the effect the proposed regulations will have on our grassroots non-federal activity, primarily for two reasons. First, the proposed regulations sweep in large amounts of purely non-federal activity. While I understand the Commission must adopt broader definitions than the existing ones, the proposed regulations capture basically all voter registration and GOTV activity during the FEA timeframes, regardless of the type of candidate they are intended to support. There are only two exceptions to the proposed rules: for mere exhortations during political speeches or events, and for public communications directed solely in referencing non-federal candidates. Both of these exceptions appropriately exclude purely non-federal activity, but the exception is very limited. I ask the Commission to consider creating a formal safe harbor that extends the mere exhortation exception to all grassroots activity and speech. The Commission could easily create a clear safe harbor by adopting a time and space ratio, as it has with other regulations. Extending this exception would allow a greater amount of purely non-federal activity to remain non-federal while accomplishing BCRA's stated purpose of preventing soft money from influencing federal elections. Second, the proposed regulations will deter grassroots activities. BCRA's restrictions have already dramatically curtailed grassroots activities that I've seen firsthand. For example, the California Republican Party, along with its local county committees, registered on average 300,000 new Republican voters each year for the 15 years preceding BCRA's enactment, through times that were both good for our party and bad, but on average 300,000 new Republicans a year, regardless, for 15 straight years. Since BCRA, our state party and our county committees together have registered fewer than 300,000 Republican voters each of the years since its enactment. I fear that the proposed regulations will make it even more difficult for state and particular local parties to engage in grassroots activity such as voter registration and voter turnout activity. In some small states that are not competitive at the federal level for our party but are competitive at the state level, requiring more of their grassroots activity to be funded with federal dollars will suffocate those state parties. And unregistered local parties with robust voter registration and GOTV programs will now have to worry about complying with more extensive federal laws. State and local parties often have only a few full-time staff members. Many local party committees have no full-time staff members at all and are primarily volunteer-driven. We need clear and simple regulations to follow, such as a clear time and space ratio. But even if you're not convinced that ours is the best best approach. I do think there's a great deal of merit to some of the other approaches recommended to the commission by the other commenters, and I look forward to discussing those with you today as well.
Thank you very much. So we'll begin with Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to pick up on a point that Mr. Nairn brought up in his remarks and that Mr. Reif and Mr. Sandler brought up in your written remarks about this mirror exhortation and whether or not we could expand this beyond a speech at an event or at a rally. The language that's used in the Chase Court is that a definition could surely be crafted that would exempt such routine or spontaneous speech-ending exhortations without opening a gaping loophole permitting state parties to use soft money to saturate voters with unlimited direct mail and robocalls that unquestionably benefit federal candidates. So I guess a couple of questions to ask is, under the court's direction, do we have the latitude in which to craft a rule that would allow for exhortations, mere exhortations, to other types of communications? And is there anything that the court identifies here? Is there anything unique about speech at a rally or at an event where an exhortation would be okay, but are there qualities in other types of speech where it would create the sorts of problems that the court was seeking to, the court identified that the legislation was trying to stamp out. Is there any reason why we would want to just limit it just to speeches or events, or do you think that we have the latitude to apply it across the board to all sorts of communications?
Commissioner, we do believe that the commission does have the latitude to do that, and that the reference to routine exhortation was not intended to be limited to one particular, the medium of a rally, as opposed to some other means of communication. But we would interpret that precisely to mean, at least as the court did, and they were quoting the brief of the plaintiffs there, to mean that the kind of expressions we're talking about before, get out and vote for Smith, for governor today, get out and vote today, without more, is a routine exhortation, and and we would submit should be excluded from the scope of the definition of federal election activity, and that would, we don't believe the court, Shays Court, intended that to be conditioned on a particular means of communicating that routine exhortation.
Yes, we would agree with that, Commissioner. I think the court was really just addressing that because that was the commission's stated rationale. There is something in between just having that one exemption and allowing a gaping loophole that allows saturation of voters. So, and I think that's the challenge for the commission is to find out where that line should be drawn. But it's certainly somewhere beyond just that speech exemption.
And if I could just ask another question, through the first panel, we've all been talking about the difficulty in drawing lines. When does speech go from being just a mere exhortation under the policy that you're advocating? You would like to have that applied across the board. When does a mere exhortation cross the threshold and become get out the vote communications? What sort of criteria should the commission consider when attempting to draw the line between what is a mere exhortation that should be permitted without triggering federal funding requirements, and when have we crossed the line where federal funding requirements would then be in place?
Well, I think our view is that using the concept of exhortation is really not the way to go, and generally speaking, that you're just going to get caught in too many kind of logical traps if you just limit it to when does an exhortation draw the line. So what you really need to do for this to kind of stand the test of time is to make this a functional definition. So what we have proposed in our written comments is a functional definition. We use the concept of what we like to call facilitation. Facilitation is obviously more than just mere exhortation. It is help is exhortation plus something that will bring the act of voting going back to the word assist again here for a second, but I don't want to fall into that trap per se. But it's more than just saying how to vote, more than saying vote for someone or go vote for someone. And what our written comments presents is a definition that's realistic, that accounts for the things that we believe really do kind of facilitate a vote. And I think you really need to have a functional definition.
Go ahead. I absolutely agree with that. And as Mr. Nearing said at the outset, we've put forth a specific proposal that would involve a time-space ratio to determine what actually constitutes get-out-the-vote activity beyond, certainly beyond mere exhortation. I agree the exhortation framework is fairly unworkable. And I would say that beyond just the ratio, there needs to be some content requirement. The one commenter or the one witness who spoke in favor of including mere encouragement as get-out-the-vote activity admitted there needs to be a line drawn somewhere. So I think, again, it's about finding where that line is drawn. And I think it's well beyond mere exhortation. And given that, I would suggest sort of jettisoning that exhortation framework and having a separate, coming up with a rule under a different framework. And whether it's ours with the time-space ratio, whether it's theirs, as well as the other commenters who suggested some kind of facilitation standard, I think those are both very workable and appropriate standards. So I would suggest moving in that direction.
If I may add to that, as I reviewed this issue, I found there to be a great irony in that as someone who is a state Republican chairman now and served as a county Republican chairman for 5.5 years, I drew up a lot of budgets. And we never spent, in 5.5 years as county chairman in San Diego, we never spent $1 on broadcast media whatsoever for get out the vote purposes. But the irony is that the proposed regulations would classify all types of broadcast messages as get out the vote activity when in fact we would never choose to engage in broadcast media for that purpose because it doesn't work. What we have found to be the most effective means of turning voters out is individualized contacts, such as visiting someone in person at their door. We built a large precinct organization in San Diego specifically for that purpose. When we sought to maximize turnout among our members, we did not turn to any broadcast means. We turned to a large in-person voter contact organization. And so the irony is that all types of messaging that really, in effect, have nothing to do with turnout and is not intended to have anything to do as turnout would be federalized and treated as such under these proposed rules, which I think justifies expanding that mere exhortation safe harbor in one of the manners that have been proposed.
Thank you, Commissioner Barrowley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to return to a big topic from this morning, and I think something you may have just described, Mr. Nearing and Mr. Felipe, is the content part of your standard about you've used the word, I believe, active encouragement, which sounds different than encourage, but it could also have the similar elements. So I'd like you to, and I appreciate that both sets of our commenters have come up with proposals, and I'd like to explore each of those. So if you could provide us with a little more context of what that means, particularly in terms of GOTV sorts of efforts. Obviously, if you're standing at someone's door, that might be an active activity, but there might be other types of contacts that are less active. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Sandler and Mr. Reeve to talk a little bit more about why facilitate is an assist.
if I may, what struck me here is that we may engage in all types of broadcast communications, for example, concerning state ballot measures, for instance, particularly in our upcoming June primary. In our June primary in California, for example, by rule, we are not permitted to take sides in any of those primary elections that will take place. We do not pre-primary endorse at the California Republican Party, but we are intensely interested in some of the ballot measures which will be on that ballot. So we may engage in broadcast advertising or other means of communication which would be swept in under the current definitions, the current rules as they are proposed, as somehow federal activity in some way and therefore would have to be funded with out of our federal account as opposed to state accounts, when clearly those ballot measures are only they are clearly state business and not federal activity by any conventional definition, but yet the unintended consequences would sweep that in. So I think a different definition is required as we classify that, because otherwise we're going to get into the position where we can't engage in speech on purely state matters under the proposed definitions because they get swept up in all of this, and I think that that's unfair and not practical in any sense.
And I appreciate that, and I think that's the line we're trying to draw. But I'm trying to understand how adding actively in front of encourage narrows that in a way that prevents you from being able to participate in ballot measures. What makes it different than encourage is what I'm trying to understand.
And we're not even necessarily suggesting that the language in the reg should say simply actively encourage, unless you do want to define that. The broader point is that some kind of encouragement, whether it includes a specific facilitation element or not, some kind of encouragement the court was concerned about, that we're not capturing it, we're excluding encouragement. That doesn't mean we need to include all kinds of encouragement. And even the earlier witness who said encouragement should be included said don't include all kinds of encouragement. So what we suggest is the line should be drawn closer. There should be a nexus between where the line is and what the Shays 3 appeal court actually said. And that was, it needs to be something more than assist. So given where that standard is, we would suggest a standard for encouragement that is certainly one that facilitates or provides specific information with the encouragement. If we're going to apply the standards to direct mail, it would be something certainly that doesn't say just go vote on November 6th, but it would say, you know, go vote, here are the polling location, here are the polling hours, that sort of thing. If you need a ride to the polls, call us at this number. It would be same thing with the phone banks, calling up people and making an active, specific reference and encouragement to going and voting. Because, and I think you hit on this earlier today, and we'll probably get into this discussion a little bit, somewhere there needs to be a line between persuasion and get out the vote. And frankly, every campaign communication is, in one sense, a get-out-the-vote communication. You could construe it that broadly under some of the theories being advanced. You're not persuading voters. You're not attempting to persuade voters to like or dislike a candidate. You're trying to persuade them to go out and vote for or against a candidate. So there just needs to be some kind of active specific element that's added so state parties and local parties know where that clear line is.
Okay. Thank you. And if just to follow up on sort of the maybe perhaps the more concrete examples that go with encouragement, but I did want to understand how you were proposing the idea of facilitate to be something. Obviously, you know, whatever vacuum the court decided the most recent decision we're responding to, it is the decision that we must deal with, and I appreciate your sympathy towards that, but you know, and yet we have to. It's a reality we have to deal with. So whether it's a vacuum, it was done in a vacuum, and whether we, you know, think that the judges knew everything they needed to know, this is what we're left with. These particular words in this particular decision.
Right. Now we agree with that, and we're respectful and mindful of the concerns were expressed by the Campaign Legal Center and Commissioner Weintraub. That is not the occasion to relitigate the case, and the commission's job is to come up with something that won't be challenged again in court, ideally, and if so, will be sustained. There's no magic, I think, in the word facilitation. The concept we're trying to get at here, I think, was actually articulated by the court in the Shays 3 appeal decision in its quotation in turn from the McConnell decision, and they're saying they're trying to ban the use of soft money for efforts by state or local parties that increase the number of like-minded registered voters who actually go to the polls. And so there's got to be something beyond, you know, the mere sort of persuasion value in a candidate-specific message and in a non-candidate-specific message that actually accomplishes, you know, by some objective measure, will increase the number of like-minded voters. So, for example, to take the obvious one, a TV ad that just says, go vote next Tuesday, that's broadcast to the whole media market is not is GOTV. It's not going to increase the number of like minds because it's not targeted in any way. That's really the concept we're trying to get at here, and any kind of information or activity that's actually helpful to the voter in terms of encouraging the act of voting, making it beyond the mere exhortation, which the court indicated could be excluded, is what we're trying to get at. And I think the examples given in the language we propose draw the line where the court would think it appropriate to do so.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, and thank you again, as Commissioner Bowerly said, for both of your constructive ideas on how to deal with this. I wanted to ask a question of Mr. Sandler and Mr. Reif about your proposal. And in the first one about voter registration activity, I think you took out one of the examples that was in there, preparing and distributing information about registration and voting.
That's probably unintentional, right?
It was an example.
Well, I think that example probably is subsumed within our right. examples that we have, so we may have done that just because it was duplicative.
Okay.
But I don't think that's an intentional in any way.
Okay. I just wanted to see if there was something in that example in particular, or do you just thought it was...
No, we tried to streamline, you know, and have our proposed regulation as being self-sustaining, and to the extent it might have been duplicative to some language we included on our own, that would be the reason we would have deleted it. I don't think you should read anything
okay.
more into that.
Okay. And then on the other definition, get out the vote activity, you changed around the example A just a little bit, just sort of nothing substantive, but added in examples D and E, which I think gets to a little bit more of what you've been all talking about, facilitating or encouraging specific people to do something, to vote. And I was wondering if you could comment on whether those two last examples, what if the campaign, it was a state campaign, and they were contacting people to vote for either a state candidate or a state ballot initiative. And they mentioned the state candidate and they mentioned the date of election, and they're calling specific voters who they think will vote for their state candidate, and they're reminding them to vote on election day.
An association of state candidates, I suppose, would be a good example since they are covered by these rules. Again, we were presenting our functional definition. We were, as Joe kind of laid out the standard from McConnell, we were trying to adhere to that standard, and we would concede that reminder call right before an election within 2-3 days of. And again, the four panelists here, we have years of campaign experience, so I think we could call ourselves experts in the types of techniques that are used to do those activities that the McConnell court was talking about. That reminder call, 3 days, 2 days, 1 day before the election, without any persuasion element to the call, I think we would concede, and our definition concedes, is the kind of activity that the commission could consider GOTV, even if it only mentioned a non-federal candidate. And I would compare that to perhaps, and again, you are correct, that would be the kind of call that would be targeted towards someone you have already identified as a likely voter for either your party or your candidate. And I would contrast that with perhaps you need a few more votes and you're on the margins of getting 50% to win the election, and you need to reach out to some undecided or persuadable voters. And you have a script 3 days before the election, and you're not sure how that person's going to vote, but you spend 2 minutes, 3 minutes on persuasion script, where you're trying to convince the voter why this candidate should be elected or why you should vote for that candidate. Mm-hmm. It could even be someone who might be identified as a ticket-splitting voter, and you just... They might vote Democratic in certain elections and Republican in others, and you're trying to bring them over. So that's another possibility. I would not consider that type of call a GOTV call. So again, we're trying to get at those activities we believe are, you know, facilitating and that what the court is addressing.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to also thank the witnesses for their concrete suggestions. That's always appreciated. And I particularly want to welcome Mr. Nehring and Mr. Felipe. I don't think we have seen you here as witnesses before. And it's always nice to see new faces. Not that it isn't also nice to see new friends. Joe and Neil, I'm having a hard time figuring out what the difference is between assist, facilitate, and encourage, and why you think facilitate is a far superior word to encourage, and what you think it encompasses that assist doesn't. And I'm assuming and hoping that you didn't pick that out by going to a thesaurus and looking up assist, trying to come up with another word that maybe the court wouldn't be so offended by.
In our own defense, we actually used the word facilitate, and we filed comments in the 2005 rulemaking after Shays won. We actually introduced the concept of facilitation in those comments, so it's not a new concept for us.
Oh, okay. Well, that's encouraging in and of itself, if I may use the word encourage. And it's interesting to listen to you guys struggle to not use words like assist and encourage as you're talking about this. And I'll just fess up my prejudice up front. I hate the word facilitate. I just don't like the word because I like plain Anglo-Saxon type words that people understand more easily. But tell me what you think the differences are.
Well, let's start with the problem of the court's decision, because I think that's where the real problem lies. There's just very little guidance in the decision.
But we're stuck with it.
Yes, you're stuck with it. But you shouldn't be so reactionary that you just go all the way to the other side and say, okay, everything that encourages is, you know, we believe the court says everything that encourages is now covered under the definitions. So you've got to find something functional and something that is realistic and something that works for the regulated community and it's not overbroad. So we went back to the drawing board and although we did put a footnote where we did define the words, we believe the word facilitation is a much more active word than assist. Assist, and you know, the court again did not really elaborate on this, so we really don't know necessarily what they were thinking. But we kind of started we wiped the slate clean, as the commission is trying to do here, and we're trying to think of a word that really captured what we believe was a realistic approach to this. And we thought facilitate, just as we did in 2005, we still believe that that word encapsulates the proper characterization of what the commission should capture in the rules.
But you're not helping me out here in trying to find the difference between facilitate, assist, and
encourage. Well, I'm not an English major, but maybe someone else on that panel can do that.
Joe, you want to try? It's your word.
Well, again, we don't think there's necessarily any magic to the word facilitation, and I'm not sure that the court was trying to say don't use the term assist at all costs. I think they were trying to get at the concept that something that actually again, beyond the persuasion message, the whole idea of GOTV is you're trying to turn out people to vote other than by just saying go out and vote for our candidate. just get them to the polls to either vote for the ticket or without mentioning the name of the candidate, even though that comes into play when you go to define it. And that's the concept. So the merely saying where you say get out and vote for Smith for governor or vote for Smith for governor, that doesn't rise to the standard that the court has in mind here. It's got to be something more. So, and you can say what's the difference, but I think the court is prepared to say to accept a definition which involves some information or activity that will actually increase the likelihood that somebody goes to vote beyond, again, just the candidate-specific persuasion message, something that tells them something about that will actually increase the likelihood that they go to vote for some reason other than that they like the candidate, because you've told them what day it is, the time of it, made it easier in some way for them to do it. And the idea, well, that sounds like assistance. We don't think that's the touchstone of what the court's opinion was.
And you've talked about this notion of targeting, which the earlier panel also talked about, targeting your likely voters and getting them out to vote, which makes sense to me. But I'm not sure where I see that in your proposed rule.
The proposed definition, again, we think the rule should be clear and detailed and comprehensive as possible to avoid further confusion and litigation. The idea is that the means of communication we talk about in here are inherently targeted. It's something other than a medium that hits everybody in a certain area, like broadcast or newspaper.
And let me ask the folks on the other side of the table so that they don't feel left out. What would we base a time-space I hesitate to use the word allocation. We haven't done so well on allocation regs recently, but what would we base the time, space, I can't use another word, allocation on? I mean, you know, do we just pick a percentage that sounds good to us? I don't know, 10%, 5%, 2%, 25%. I mean, how do we figure out what would be an appropriate time, space ratio?
Sure, and I'll say I'm here largely in a supporting role for Mr. Nearing, but I'm happy to weigh in on some of these legal issues, and particularly the standard we presented. The commission has a lot of experience in dealing with one of the reasons we proposed this was because this is something that you've used in other contexts, and you know there's a couple ways to slice it, I think. The first is what really thinking in terms of what do campaigns, and specifically in this context, what do parties actually do? So starting from a get out the vote, say a postcard that's nothing except go out and vote. It drops 3 days before the election. Go out and vote. Here's your polling place. Here are the polling hours. 100% facilitation, we'll call it, and I'm happy to weigh in on the facilitation aspect too, because in my mind that's encouragement plus specific information making it more likely and easy for the person to go vote. It's something other than individualized assistance, but it's an encouragement plus, and I think that you can frame it in that language that will certainly address your concern about using encouragement in terms of going back to court and having an encouragement element there. But on the other hand, certainly a pure persuasion piece that says nothing about going out and voting would surely be not included. So, I mean, I would suggest the commission could actually, and perhaps we could submit more comments, but the commission could also, you know, look at some examples of these. What kind of mailers are sent out? To what? When does that GOTV element of a communication or a call cross that threshold? I don't know what the specific threshold is, and if I had a clear idea of that, we probably would have suggested that. But as Mr. Reif pointed out before, a call, for instance, to voters the day before the election in a close race that's primarily aimed at persuasion, and then say you're successful in persuading that person at the end, you tell them where the polling place is. You know, that's still probably a persuasion call because it's only, you know, it might be 10% get out the vote at the end. Clearly, that's not enough. But a call to identified supporters that might even have a small persuasion piece as sort of that extra motivation to go vote. You know, go vote on, you know, on Tuesday, or your taxes are going to go up, and your poll is located at this location. That probably would count. So I don't know where exactly that line is, but given that the commission does have experience in time-space ratios, I would suggest that you could find a proper one.
If I may add to that.
Appreciate your confidence.
if I may add to that, I think that Democrats and Republicans can agree that there is a clear need for a bright line definition that folks can take a look at and clearly identify. Absent that, we're left with this gray area, which will no doubt have a chilling effect on state and local campaign activity. And just one example that I would cite is in San Diego County, the Republicans in my county have a big emphasis on voter turnout. It's the biggest, most expensive program that we engage in. Zero broadcast ads, no radio ads, no TV. It's all aimed at in-person contact and supplemented to some degree by mail. But if I have a local school board candidate who's engaged in a precinct walk, and he also wants to walk the county party door hanger, which lists a variety of different candidates on that, and it may or may not have a label that indicates the polling place. If there's any question as to whether or not that is legal for him to distribute or not, then he's going to default to not distributing at all and not getting that information out and so on. And when you take that type of decision and multiply that across hundreds and thousands of races, it does create a chilling effect for candidates who are not intended to be addressed by BCRA.
Thank you, Commissioner McGann. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the commenters, like I did the first panel, for your time, particularly Chairman Nearing for coming, because it's rare for someone who is not a practitioner in the area, but instead a political operative, to come and testify. And given the opportunity that presents, I'd like to ask you a few questions that are similar to what I asked the previous panel. There's words in the statute, one word in particular, get out the vote, that we are trying to put legal terms on, but I think it might help to have a political operative definition, and to the extent you could describe what you think is get out the vote, maybe contrast it with what is not get out the vote. That would help at least some of our thinking as to how to produce a rule that actually allows for folks to know what is and what is not permissible.
I think that's an excellent question, because what I see is a tremendous gap between what is considered get-out-the-vote activity in hearing rooms in Washington versus what get-out-the-vote activity is out in the field. And as we were discussing this internally leading up to the hearing, and there were discussions of ads and such, we're not going to run ads in order to drive turnout up. That's not going to fall under my get out the vote definition whatsoever, because it won't work. And I would recommend to you the book Get Out the Vote by Harvard University's Donald Green and Alan Gerber, which lists every means of that campaigns and political parties may engage in order to maximize turnout. And the two methods that are repeatedly that are mentioned most often in rooms like this, which are broadcast ads and robocalls, are completely ineffective in terms of driving turnout. When I became county leader in San Diego in 2001, we sought to maximize Republican turnout. We immediately started building a Republican precinct organization where we would recruit volunteers and ask them to visit their Republican neighbors with a piece of campaign literature, a door hanger that the county party would provide, listing all of our candidates from the top of the ticket to the bottom, and knocking on doors, not just doing the lit drop, but knocking on doors, ringing the doorbell, and handing the door hanger to someone, because that demonstrably has the greatest impact on turnout. So when I think about turnout, I think about programs that have a practical impact on turnout, not those that are simply, that when you're sitting in a conference room and watch an ad on TV, yep, that's a turnout ad. It's not, because it doesn't work to that effect. Well, my concern is when questions are raised such as, well, if the door hanger includes the polling place or it doesn't include the polling place, that's FEA or not FEA. This just drives people out in the field crazy, because what we may have a situation in California where my state party is going to provide all the door hangers for the entire GOTV operation throughout the state, but my county party may come along and put a label on it indicating that the polling place for the household where this door hanger is going to be delivered is at this place. Well, is the total door hanger now federal activity? Is only the label, does the Avery label that comes out of the laser printer, does that have to be paid for with federal dollars, or does the state party now have to re-report all of that as federal activity? You're dealing with volunteers out in the field who are just trying to get their Republican neighbors, out to vote, and it goes into all of these, various other questions that when we're federalizing all of this activity. So my answer is, it's programs that we engage in that have a practical impact on increasing turnout when executed, and that is overwhelmingly in-person contact, and that is highly personalized.
To follow up to that, when a party, and I think both parties do this and they call them different things, but when a party puts together, whether it's its victory plan or its coordinated campaign plan, whatever it may be called on the other side of the aisle, you have various line items. Budgeting, right? And you have maybe state candidate advocacy, and you have GOTV and voter ID. And I want to try to explore, from your perspective, as someone who is an operative, not a practitioner of the law, but a practitioner of the ground game, flesh out, if you could, a little bit more of the distinction between what Mr. Sobota characterized as persuasive mail in the first panel and get out the vote and things that could be federal election activity. It's the same theme we've all hit, but as an operative, what's the difference between the two?
I think there's a difference in terms of what means is used to deliver what message. First, I would define persuasive communications to be communications that are intended to influence how someone would vote if they choose to turn out to vote. That's persuasion.
get-out-the-vote activity is to affect the decision of whether or not that individual chooses to vote at all, recognizing that the world is run by those who show up, not those who are merely registered to show up. And so what we have found is that from an efficacy standpoint, persuasive messages are best delivered through broadcast media and mail and perhaps some telephone advocacy, although not as a primary measure, while the methods used to maximize turnout are those which are individualized in-person contacts. And I can't tell you how many times we've had to have, well, we don't have discussions internally in terms of what's the best type of TV ad in order to maximize turnout. The practical issues that we have to walk through are, how do we visit people in gated communities? How do we recruit someone from inside a particular neighborhood? Is it more effective for me to recruit a pool of precinct walkers and disperse them into targeted districts, or recruit volunteers out of targeted districts to make sure that's covered? Because there's a difference when you're between when you're visited by your neighbor versus when you're visited by some random person or someone who's paid to do that. We find that recruiting members of the party to visit their neighbors of that party is the most effective means of doing that. So there's a distinction in terms of intent, persuade if they're going to, how they would act if they choose to turn out and vote, but there's also a difference in terms of methodology that's used to carry that message. So the notion of classifying broadcast television ads or radio ads as turnout activity, to me, it represents a total disconnect from what's happening in the field.
I'd like to ask you a question about voter identification. I've heard it argued that voter ID done in an off-year election or a non-federal election somehow is still in connection with a federal election because that voter ID data is still going to exist. You being from California, first at the county level and now statewide as chair, I think of ballot initiatives and how you ID for ballot initiatives or how you would ID for state candidates. Could you explain to us what correlation, if any, there is between voter ID in an off-year for a ballot initiative and a federal candidate? Because I could think of 10 examples off the top of my head that demonstrate there's no correlation, but there is this argument that somehow voter ID carries over to all elections.
The notion that voter ID data is going to carry some lasting benefit beyond a couple of months or a year is simply impractical. Politics is dynamic. Just look at how different the political environment is today compared to how it was 12 months ago. I guarantee you that voter ID data that was conducted in last year's presidential election is meaningless today among those voters who we would be most interested in, which is independent voters and those who are generally not strongly aligned with a political party.
Could I ask you why? Maybe a specific example, maybe an issue that you would have tested last cycle that is a no import this cycle and vice versa?
Well, I would say that that certainly given the current economic climate, that we see a rise in prevalence of issues related to job creation, taxation, and the like, and those issues that are more on the regulatory side drop. We've seen in California, you know, a lot of talk about the need for job creation in our state. We have an unemployment rate that's 2% above the national average right now, and we have a tremendous number of people who are fleeing our state for jobs in other states. So, simply, voter ID in terms of let's go one step level. Voter ID might indicate we're placing calls to someone to determine what's the most important issue to them. Well, if you've lost your job since that voter ID question was asked, chances are the issues that are most important to you have changed. And you may be more interested in something that's going to generate jobs as opposed to, well, passing that tax increase because it's for, you know, some good cause or something to that effect. The issues matrix is very dynamic, and therefore, when you key your voter ID questions off of some of those issues, then the data becomes old very, very quickly. I would never rely upon, for example, issue questions that were, you know, 12 months old in order to determine my persuasion or GOTV messages, because it's not going to be accurate. It's not going to be a good investment of my time or money.
So timing matters. Proximity to that election, in your experience, is a critical
Is absolutely critical.
Now, that would also be true of Get Out the Vote, right? You don't do Get Out the Vote in September. You do it around the election, which kind of echoes Mr. Reese's proposed rule. They have one prong of sort of 72 hours within the election.
Right. Well, in our state,
voting takes place during the final 30 days. You can vote by mail, and it's very easy, unlike New York, for example, which would be the extreme opposite example, where it's very, very difficult to vote by mail. In California, it's very easy. In fact, you can register as a permanent absentee voter. We'll just mail your ballot to you, regardless of whether you have a local polling place or not. We do not engage in get-out-the-vote activity until the last possible moment. For example, we will engage in one round of get-out-the-vote activity just before absentee ballots are dropped into the mail so that the contact is in the closest proximity to when the decision will be made, that the pen goes onto the ballot and decisions are made, and then another round of GOTV in the window just before Election Day itself, which, by the way, underscores the fact that when you create a national standard, that will apply, that may or may not be rational in some states. For example, having a 30-day get-out-the-vote window in New York wouldn't make sense, where 95% of voters are going to cast their ballot on Election Day, as opposed to in California, where half of our ballots are going to be cast before Election Day.
One final question, Mr. Chairman.
We do have some time here.
I think you were both here for the first panel, and I asked about a hypothetical newspaper ad that references a state candidate for governor and says, vote for, let's say, Schwarzenegger, just as keep it hypothetical, right, Mr. Reif? We don't want you to get too excited. Just hypothetical.
He's termed out.
My sense is that there's consensus that that's not get out the vote. If you add the date of the election, that's not get out the vote. But if you say go vote for Schwarzenegger, there's a distinction in some minds between go and just voting. Seems to me if one goes to lunch versus lunch, it's kind of the same thing. But as an operative, do you see a distinction between the two?
First, no, but let me also add to that that, and this underscores the point, you've provided a perfect example, even a better example than mine. In my view, you can run a newspaper ad that advocates express advocacy for a clearly identified candidate. You can list the election day, when the polls will be open, and provide a map to the polling place. And in a practical sense, that newspaper ad is not get-out-the-vote activity because it will have no impact on turnout whatsoever. Zippo.
Why do you say that? Do you have a basis, whether it's your expert experience or background or any kind of something we could have for the record? Because a lot of times we get caught up and people make those statements, but we don't really
touch it out. And I believe that if you're engaged in regulating get-out-the-vote activity, which is clearly what's taking place here, then you're in a similar position to where I was when I became county leader in San Diego in 2001, in that we had not run a voter turnout operation in a decade in my county before I became chairman. So I was not wedded to a particular approach when we knew that we wanted to maximize turnout. We didn't know how we wanted to do that. So we went out and looked and tried to find, you know, some empirical data to show us what's the best way to do it. Should we take out newspaper ads? Should we knock on people's doors? Should we do phone banks? Phone banks would be the normal, the path of least resistance to do that. But we opted not to do that because it's ineffective based upon the research of Professors Green and Gerber at Harvard. They had not published a book at that point. They've since published a book. It's now in its second edition, which I would recommend to everyone. In fact, there is summary data for each voter turnout methodology and even broken down by how many dollars per additional vote based upon the studies that they've compiled. And so I don't believe any rational political organization would engage in GOTV activity through newspaper ads. Now, when you're in the business of making rules, perhaps someone's going to be in a conference room and look at something and say, well, this says get out the vote, this says the date of the election, it has a map to the polling place where you can call for information, even has the phone number for the county registrar of voters. That's not rational get out the vote activity.
In your world, that's just not get out the vote.
It's not, because it won't work.
How about Mr. Sandler, Mr. Reif, you want to agree or disagree with that or elaborate?
There's two issues involved in the definition. One is the medium of communication, and one is the content of communication. And we didn't see the whole hypothetical from the last panel, but if you're talking about a newspaper ad, that clearly it makes it an easy hypothetical, because the medium of communication doesn't meet the test of the Shays Court that encourages like-minded voters. It makes it more likely for like-minded voters to get out and vote, because it's addressed to everybody. That's just not sufficiently individualized. So in that hypothetical, I don't think it even reached the issue of content. It's not GOTV.
Also, you couldn't do a newspaper ad giving instructions on where to vote, because presumably that advertisement would be seen by people voting in multiple precincts. So it's almost impossible to craft a newspaper ad that could be so informational to assist in the act of voting.
We've got some pretty small newspapers in some of our rural
areas. That's pretty small. Probably costs about $1 to put it out, hopefully.
Thank you.
Ms. Duncan, do you have any questions?
No, Mr. Chairman, we don't. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Gibson. I'd like to go back to Commissioner Weintraub's question and see if we could flesh it out a little bit, the difference between your proposal where we move between assist and encourage, and in between we find something like facilitate. What is in encourage that's so broad that facilitate would narrow? In other words, there's an aspect of encouragement, we were told in the previous panel, that you can either bifurcate it or sliver off aspects of it that should not be included in the definition we end up with. I understand the use of the word facilitate to try and help us get there. But what examples could you give us, in your opinion, that would be left off of the word? It constitutes encouragement in the general definition, but would be excluded if we were just to say facilitate.
Well, I think the primary example that we talk extensively about in our comments are vote for Governor Smith, in this example, on November 7th. Clearly, in our view, and I think we've seen this in a lot of the other written comments, merely giving the date of an election would be clearly an example, and I think the Commission acknowledged that themselves in their examples that we actually omitted from our proposed regulations, because it's subsumed already within our proposed definition. But something like merely giving the date of the election is something that we would not see as something that would facilitate a vote. And I'm sure Chairman Nerin could probably talk extensively about how little GOTV effect merely giving the date of the election provides. That would be definitely one example. So in terms of, there are types and modes of communications that are more likely to easily be seen as GOTV than others. The in-person contact, where you may have a form with you, or you're trying to collect a ballot, or give a ballot, or give an absentee ballot, or collect a mail ballot. These things are so evidently and obviously GOTV. The reminder phone call. So there are types of communications that are more obvious that would be GOTV. Then there are ones that are obviously not GOTV that we've discussed today. And that's why we kind of went away from, and I think this is where the Commission got caught up with the court, is this concept of individualized contact is really where you fell into a problem. And the advisory opinion that they had before them, there was some logical leaps, I would admit, in that opinion, that I could see why the court would have some concerns. That's why we believe you should redirect back to the modes of communication. The obvious modes of communication that shouldn't be GOTV, TV, radio, newspapers, mass communications. Then there's the one that probably falls in the middle that's the most difficult to deal with is mail. Because with mail, you have the opportunity to do a lot of things. You can merely provide a persuasive communication, and there's really no time element. We talked about the phone call, where you can spend 3 minutes trying to persuade a voter, or you could spend 15 seconds reminding them to vote. So even within phones, you can draw a line. So the one type of communication I think you will possibly struggle with is mail, because mail gives you the opportunity to merely provide persuasive information, plus adding the date of the election, plus an absentee ballot or a phone number. That's the one I think that you will probably have to spend the most time dealing with when you craft your final regulation. So in our proposal, again, we try to give you examples of things we believe would cross that line. So, and again, being mindful of the court's directive. So if you have a mailing that gives a date of the election plus the time when the polls are open, the location of a polling place in a mailing, because again, a mailing can be highly targeted. We create a functional definition, and we think that's the way to go. And those are the types of examples, and that's how you should draw the line.
What about in the modern world, especially our kids who are living by texting? And it came up in conversations, but I mean, I can foresee a situation where you get a text saying, just a reminder about the election, and then press here, and then all of a sudden you have a way to get from where you are in your GPS to the polling place.
And absolutely.
And I can see all this coming
sure.
about.
And then, yeah, I think this was not addressed in the Shays decision, and I believe we're the only commenters who even addressed the issue. Yeah. But we even included in our proposed definition text messaging as an example of mode of communication, and as well as email.
Yeah. Facebook, YouTube, it's all kind of an avalanche of ways to communicate, and we're going to be looking at how to the parse and some of those areas too, I suppose. Any further comments from any other commissioners? Anything further you'd like to add to your comments?
Could I just, you know, because the timing element I think is important, and it was hit on a couple times, and I just want to give another specific example of why timing is important, why we've always thought it was, you know, from the RNC perspective and working with state parties. You know, in the 2000 election, our presidential candidate led all the polls quite convincingly in the days leading up to the elections and lost the popular vote by 2 million votes. And in the state elections in Virginia and New Jersey next year, we undertook something called the 72-hour task force. We didn't undertake the 60-day task force or the 90-day task force. We undertook the 72-hour task force to figure out why was it that we couldn't get our voters to the polls in the numbers that we thought they'd show up, in the numbers that the polling reflected based on persuasive communications leading up to that. And out of that came state-level get-out-the-vote programs called the 72-hour project. Again, the days leading up to the election. So it just underscores the point that facilitating the vote and turning out the vote is a time-bracketed activity. And content bracketed. We didn't look at, nothing came out of that that led us to change how we advertise or run different kinds of newspaper ads. It was the grassroots phone and precinct walking activities that came out of that. And so I want to emphasize that timing element, because I think it's something that wasn't addressed much in the NPRM and was addressed by our colleagues here in their comments, but I do encourage you to consider that element more fully.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one follow-up, because you talk about the timing element in your 72-hour program, which makes perfect sense to me, but as you probably know, we tried a 72-hour limit, and that got tossed out in court. And you've said, well, robocalls are not an effective way of getting out the vote, but that was exactly what they were using in that LA advisory opinion that we issued, and we were hammered for not covering that. So, I mean, it's not that, I think what you're saying makes a certain amount of sense. It's just that I think we've tried some of these things before and they haven't worked out very well for us.
I'll just make one quick comment about that 72-hour requirement and the past attempts. And our proposal, again, bringing it back to there. We do include robocalls, again, going back to just the mode of the communication, not worrying about targeting, keeping it as a simple methodology. And I would note that that's the only, although we did reintroduce the 72-hour element, we were being very limited in its application. I think the Commission's problem was, or the implication of the original regulations in 2002, was that the 72-hour element was across the board applicable, and which I think is troubling. And, of course, we don't adhere to that. And it's only in that one limited aspect do we introduce the 72-hour requirement.
So for 4 days out, you give some information about the polling place. Clearly, that's GOTV. And the court, I think in Chase 1, would have, that's what they were focused on.
My concern here is in the chasm that exists between the what has to take place in terms of a rulemaking process here in Washington and what happens out there in the field. It is enormous. And I would just stress, in the upcoming June primary election, I am intensely interested in one particular ballot measure that will appear on that June ballot. I don't care about any federal candidate who will appear on that ballot whatsoever. Yet, I have to deal with a federal election activity window leading up to that date. And under the proposed rule, my mail, persuasion mail, on that ballot measure, if it mentions election day and related information, is going to be considered federal election activity under this proposed rule. And I don't care about any federal candidate on that ballot.
I hear you, but it certainly is not unknown for individual groups to introduce a very controversial ballot measure in order to drive turnout of voters who will care about that ballot measure because they think that this will also help their federal candidates. I mean, we have seen this happen. This is a real, this is not a hypothetical. We've seen it happen in a number of elections, and I've seen it happen in a number of different states. So, you know, how are we supposed to write a rule that says, well, okay, I get you. You know, that one, you don't care about any federal race. You are only focused on the ballot measure. But what about the one where they actually do care about the federal race and they think, wow, what a great idea. We are going to get all of our pro-life voters out by putting this measure on the ballot or all of our gun people out by doing that measure. I mean, these things do happen.
Well, I think the principle to recognize is that BICR was not intended to federalize the state and local activity, but yet that is the effect. That is what you will be doing if you adopt the rule as it is proposed. And I'll give you an example. I'll come back to my example about June. The measure that I care about was put on the ballot by the legislature and the governor. It was not put on the ballot by any type of political group and so on, and is one that I care about because it is the Washington State-style top-two primary measure that would be on the ballot in California. I'm intensely interested in defeating that ballot measure. And so this wasn't intended to drive some turnout or anything like that, but yet my ability to communicate on that purely state issue is going to be inhibited by the proposed rule here, and that's why a more narrow construction is necessary. And I, you know, I don't often agree with the Los Angeles County Democratic Central Committee, but I am happy to do so in this particular case, as well as the California Democratic Party, which provided comments. A narrower construction is necessary because the long list of state and local activity that you will be restricting through the rule as proposed, to me, is inappropriate and inconsistent with the intent of BICR to leave such activity alone.
Are there any further questions? If not, I want to thank all of you. Both groups of you really had a lot to offer. I think we really appreciate the specific information you offered for us, and as well as on the grassroots, here's how it really gets done type of approach. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then we'll adjourn this meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.